I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, it is April Fool's Day, and it's fitting because everything coming out of Olympia seems like one big joke. Plus, Democrats reject the idea of a sales tax holiday to help families and teachers because they want to keep paying for laser hair removal for transgender inmates. And Idaho looks to ban truck nuts and... Let me try that again. Idaho looks to ban truck nuts and boy boobies. That and much more coming up today. Stop laughing on Undivided. If you'd like to become a subscriber to the show, we sure would appreciate it. We are a fan-funded show, after all. You can sign up for just $5 a month at undividedpod.com. And if you are a first responder, a veteran, or a member of the military, right now you can get 30% off your first year of Undivided by using the promo code USA. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm kind of bummed because on April Fool's Day, I usually try to pull an April Fool's Day prank on you guys. But there is literally nothing I can come up with that is a better joke than what's happening in Olympia in the legislature right now. So I'm not even going to try, okay? There'll be no pranks on you today on Undivided. You'll just feel like you're getting pranked because these things are so utterly stupid that it just simply must be a joke. It's not, though. So we're talking a lot about the budget and a lot about these new taxes that are going to be pushed on you because Democrats simply cannot spend money wisely. They must absolutely spend money on everything and anything that their heart desires, and they don't care if it means that your property taxes go up. They don't care if it means that your gas taxes go up. They don't care if it means that they tax major employers out of the state and ruin our economy. No better example of this than something that happened yesterday before House Democrats passed their version of the budget, which happened like after midnight, because of course. So as these things go, you know, Republicans know they don't have the votes to stop this massive tax package and bloated budget. So they're trying to introduce some amendments here and there that are going to maybe make it a little bit better. And I've never seen anything that better illustrates the misguided priorities of Democrats than this, truly. So Republicans and State Representative Travis Couture is the one who you're going to hear from here. They introduce a pretty simple amendment, like, hey, you've got all these taxes you're pushing out. You know, we always talk about the fact that school supplies are so expensive and families are struggling and sometimes teachers have to come out of pocket for school supplies. So let's do this. Let's just give families and, yes, even teachers a short little sales tax holiday on school supplies in the fall. That's a great idea, right? Hey, let's give them anything that's related as school supply. You know, in the old school supply section at Walmart or Target, whatever it is. No sales tax for just a set period of time so families can save a little bit of money. Won't cost us a bunch. And as Travis Couture lays out in his speech on the House floor, there's a bunch of ways that we can pay for this. We can offset the cost of giving this little sales tax holiday by getting rid of some of these really unnecessary, completely ideologically driven line items in the state budget. Enjoy this montage I've put together of Democrats rejecting this idea.
This sales tax holiday would be a great message. And in exchange, what we do is we cut this junk drawer of things that aren't helping families and teachers in our state. We heard a little bit ago that tough decisions had to be made to develop this budget. There wasn't any tough decisions actually made because there is still a junk drawer of other things, including laser hair removal for transgender inmates in our prisons. We also do fund transgender surgeries in Medicaid.
I'm glad to stand up on this day of Trans Day of Visibility to speak strongly against this amendment. You know, It pains me to hear the previous speaker say that he'd rather not fund some of these things and refer to some of the investments that we've made in the people of Washington as junk drawer investments.
I know that folks are interested in eliminating DEI, and it is first and foremost an effort to erase history. to erase the contributions of those who are just like me, those who are just like the folks who are trans in our community, LGBTQ, folks who have grown up with disabilities. It is an erasure of our contribution to the fabric of this community. It is about erasure. You know what happens when you erase folks? You put them in the drunk drawer.
I don't need to fund a bunch of $100,000 paid pronoun police in our state universities. I would rather give a sales tax break to our families and our teachers so they could send their kids back to school. Please vote yes.
They voted no. I mean, really think about that. That is Olympia in a nutshell. They are choosing laser hair removal for transgender prison inmates, public funding of trans surgeries, and what amounts to DEI pronoun police on campuses like the University of Washington. They're choosing that over helping working class people. They're choosing that over helping families pay for school supplies and helping teachers pay for school supplies. And then they want to shame Travis Couture because, of course, well, that's racist. And that's what Representative Jamila Taylor was saying. That's racist. You want to put us black people in the junk drawer. And then the other Democratic representative who shames him for suggesting such a thing on Trans Day of Visibility. Basically, how could you suggest getting rid of our funding for laser hair removal for transgender inmates on a day as important as Trans Day of Visibility? And it was a part of that that didn't make the montage is she goes on to say, we know that these services lead to less suicide among and suicidal ideation among trans youth and trans people. And Travis Couture comes back immediately and says, that's not true. That's junk science. It's been disproven, which it has. But they keep using that on the floor because that's their sort of cudgel or whatever it is. That's their trump card that, oh, if we don't pay for these things, if we don't give transgender inmates laser hair removal so they feel more feminine, then they're going to kill themselves. And they always go back to, if we don't let kids, you know, cut their healthy breasts off, then they're going to kill themselves. And there's actually no science whatsoever that backs that up. It's called the Trevor Project. It was something put out that's been completely disproven. It's not true at all, yet they continue to use it on the floor. So just keep that in mind for those of you who are vote blue no matter who, that Democrats had an opportunity to give a sales tax holiday to families and teachers to buy back to school supplies. All they had to do is exchange it for the money that they're spending giving trans inmates laser hair removal and paying for DEI positions at the University of Washington that go and investigate students if they're not using the proper pronouns, etc. And they didn't do it. So it's just nothing sums it up. Joke's on us because those are the people who voters sent to Olympia. All right. It gets even worse, I think. So yesterday there was a huge, and actually this is great, there was a huge outpouring of public opposition to the bill that will increase property taxes across the state of Washington. You guys are familiar with this. If anybody's watching for the first time, right now our property tax increases are capped at 1% a year. That's the most they can go up without a vote of the people. And that was something that voters passed via initiative 20-something years ago. So it's something voters wanted. Hey, you can't just raise our property taxes at will without asking our permission. So the law that they're now trying to pass is to lift that cap without any limit. Basically, they're going to tie property tax increases to population growth and the rate of inflation. So you could have 8, 9, 10% property tax increases every year. And the impact of that is going to be obvious. So they can pay for things like laser hair removal for transgender inmates, but I digress. So the impact of that is going to be obvious. I mean, there are already people who are having a hard time living here. It's become very unaffordable because of all these things Democrats pass, even though they want to blame it on other stuff. So this is going to hurt the elderly, it's going to hurt the low income, and it's going to make home ownership completely unattainable. So I couldn't help but notice there's 43,000 people, 43,000 people who took the time to sign in pro or con, with, of course, the vast, 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 vast majority of them signing in opposed to this property tax increase. So then the Democrats allow testimony from the public. And of course, they control basically who gets to testify. So even though this is like a 90-something percent issue, they kind of split it equally. So you hear from people who are in support of it and people who are opposed to it. It became very obvious when watching this testimony where that division was. Regular, hardworking people were the ones who were opposed to it. And the ones who showed up in Olympia to testify in favor of hiking your property taxes, without fail, these were the special interest groups who benefit from that money and politicians who have already come up with ways to spend it.
My name is John DeRoos, and I'm the chief of police for the Everett Police Department. I'm here today on behalf of the city of Everett testifying in support of Senate Bill 5798.
My name is Lisa Janicki. I'm a Skagit County commissioner, and I'm here to in support of 5798.
My name is Heidi Eisenhower, a county commissioner from Jefferson County. I'm here today to support Senate Bill 5798.
My name is Aaron Yard, and I'm the Director of Policy and Advocacy at Building Changes. I'm submitting this testimony in support of 5798.
For the record, my name is Brian Raines, and I serve as the Chief Executive Officer for Rural Resources Community Action.
My name is Hunter George. I'm the Government Relations Officer for the Metropolitan Park District of Tacoma.
Thank you. My name is Brennan Blue, Fire Chief for the City of Vancouver.
Good evening. I'm Snohomish County Executive Dave Summers, here in support of Senate Bill 5798.
I'm Julie Salvi with the Washington Education Association, testifying pro.
I'm the general counsel with the Washington State Council of County and City Employees, AFSCME Council 2. I'm here today to sign in pro.
My name is Kathleen Koch, and I am representing the City of Connell.
My name is Molly Gilbert, and I'm an investigator at the King County Department of Public Defense, and I am in strong support of Senate Bill 5798.
My name is John Thunheim. I'm the prosecuting attorney here in Thurston County.
I'm King County Sheriff Patty Cole Tyndall, testifying in support of Senate Bill 5798 on behalf of King County and public safety.
Yeah. So without fail, the people who were in support of it are people who, like the Public Defenders Association, were like, we need to raise people's property taxes so we can continue to defend criminals. And then people who are mayors, heads of agencies, who, look, they might have legitimate reasons why they think they need more money. Whether it's law enforcement or whether it's to, you know, for a city to revamp sidewalks or whatever it is, they might have legitimate reasons to believe that they need more money, and the best way for them to get more money is to increase your property taxes. What I would point out is they can already do that. They just have to ask your permission. If the reasons they need more property taxes are that justifiable, they can come to you and ask you. I mean, in King County, you heard from the sheriff there? Okay, if you need more money in King County, of all places, to better patrol the county, you can put that on the ballot for voters and ask them for more money for public safety. Nothing is stopping you from doing that. The thing is, they want to cut out the middleman, the voters, and they just want to willy-nilly increase property taxes. So, of course, the special interests and the government officials who don't want to ask the voters, they just want money, 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 and they don't care what the impact is. None of them are in there like, we know this is really tough, and we know this is a really unaffordable time to be living in Washington State, and oh my gosh, you know, this sucks. Let me make the best possible pitch for you. No, it's like, give us more of your money, without us having to ask voters to take a vote. On the flip side, the stories of the people who actually got a chance to testify, who are opposed to it, were deeply personal and explain very well the real-world implications of allowing these property tax increases to take effect.
Okay, well, thank you for the opportunity to testify. We live in Vancouver, Washington, and we are retired. And we're living in the house that we raised our children in. And we've lived here for more than 45 years as the taxes have gone up a lot on us because of this housing values going up, and we're relying on our current limited income and its fixed income. So we're worried that if we suddenly find that our property taxes are going up 4% a year instead of 1% a year, 4% a year for 10 years is 40%. We have a fixed income, and we won't be able to afford that. We'll be taxed out of our house, and we'll have to sell it. We think that's unfair, and we urge that you vote against this tax, 5798.
Thank you, Joe. Lori, did you want to say anything separately?
No.
Okay.
We put our thoughts together. Thank you.
And so efficient with your time. Thank you so much.
I love that couple so much. Because you can tell those are two people who would rather be doing anything else, who aren't used to testifying in Olympia, who are just going through a difficult situation where they're going to have to, 45 years they've lived in that home. 45 years they've raised their kids there. So we're going to stick it to a family that's called this state home and the same house for 45 years because our cities and our county and our state failed to budget. Really? And I mean, who's standing up for them? They've got to be at this committee hearing standing up for themselves because the majority party is not standing up for people like that couple. They're looking out for the interests of the Defenders Association. You know, they're looking out for the interests of all the special interest groups who they've promised money to, who are going to do X, Y, Z, just fat on the government, and not a couple like that. I mean, to me, that's so easy. And that wasn't the only personal story, certainly, that was allowed to testify yesterday. But there was more than 40,000 people who signed in opposed to these tax increases. And I have to imagine that a lot of them have a story very similar to that. It honestly, it pains me. That's what we're doing to a couple that's called this state home for 45 years and raised their kids here. We're going to tax them out of their home to pay for nonsense like laser hair removal for transgender inmates. And then when we point out that that's nonsense, we get the Democrats who are like, shame on you for saying that on Trans Day of Visibility. And that's racist and that's transphobic and all it is. You guys are absolutely full of shit. It's so unreal at this point. It should be such an easy decision for them to say, we can't do this to families. We have to find places to cut. We have to find other ways. But they won't do it. They don't care. It could be a million people who sign in con. If Democrats want to do it, they're just going to do it. And why wouldn't they? They keep getting sent back to Olympia to do stuff just like that. I thought it was a really powerful moment. Senator Chris Gildon, who's a Republican, he actually had all of the whole, well, I'll just let him show you, but a big stack of papers to represent the people who had signed in opposed to this bill but weren't able to actually be there to testify.
One of the things that I've noticed about this particular bill is the large amount of input that we've received from the public. And I've got here a list of all of the people who have signed in against this particular bill. And I'm just curious, I see 43,153 people who have signed in against it, which is about 95%. Have we ever seen anything of this magnitude before?
I don't believe so. If I recall, there is a bill 1163 from this year related to firearms that had about 8,200 or 8,300 signed in opposition.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. So the next closest example is like around 10,000. 43,000 took the time to sign in and register their opposition to this. So we asked Senator Chris Gildon not only to come on to talk about this hearing yesterday from sort of his perspective in the minority party again, and that elections have consequences and they can sit there and he can, you know, show the overwhelming opposition to this. But at the end of the day, if Democrats want to pass something, they're going to pass it. But Senator Gildon was also obviously on the Senate floor on Saturday when Senate Democrats pushed through their largest package of tax increases in state history. So we discussed that with him as well. Senator Gildon, welcome to Undivided.
Well, thank you for having me, Brandy. I'm glad to be here.
You get any angry tweets at you or emails about killing a whole tree?
You know, they brought the print-offs to me yesterday. So for folks who may not realize, this was over 43,000 people who signed in against the property tax bill just yesterday.
Wow.
And so we brought that in because I wanted to make sure that everyone knew the level of backlash that this bill was facing.
Yeah. And I think if not for that, it's not always obvious because you'll have these hearings. And honestly, usually the number of people who sign in against some of these Democratic proposals far outnumbers the people who sign in favor of it, as was the case here. I mean, overwhelmingly. But then they kind of give equal time at the public hearing to the pro and the con. Is there a rationale for that? Because that always kind of bothered me. Like, if you've got 43,000 people who are opposed to something and, what, 1,000 who are in favor of it, why do those two sides get equal time at a hearing?
Yeah, and I think a lot of that depends on the chair. So what they do a lot of times with the controversial bills is they'll hold the most controversial bill until the end of the committee hearing. They'll stack it with four or five non-controversial bills, then do the controversial bill at the end, and then, like you say, give equal time to both sides, even though it's so skewed.
Yeah. For you, I mean, there was definitely some, we played on the show today, some of the more powerful, I think, testimony. But what do you think from the testimony you heard is the most effective in sort of arguing about the negative consequences of this property tax increase?
Well, I think it's the same arguments that you've heard time and time again, is how this is going to affect the normal, everyday, middle-class person in our state. I think it's very interesting to look at the Senate Democrats' proposal, because on one hand, you have people coming in saying, please support this wealth tax or this jobs tax, which is a very progressive, make the rich pay their fair share. But then on the backside, they've got this property tax waiting that's going to affect everyone, and it's a very regressive tax. So it's just been interesting watching all of this, Brandy, because they have the push for progressive taxes and then all of a sudden the push for regressive taxes. And then with the budget at large, you know, they have this push to raise $21 billion in new taxes, but then to reduce the sales tax by a half of a percent. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Or they have this push to give $4 billion of pay raises to state employees and then put those same state employees on furlough to achieve savings. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, with the sales tax thing, and you can tell me if you think I'm off base, it seems like it's just put there, you know, it's very nominal, obviously, in comparison to the increases that people are going to face at the gas pump with the gas tax increase and the property tax increases. I feel like it's so they can say we're cutting the sales tax without like getting into the dirty details of it. I mean, do you think that's why it's there?
Well, history will prove me right or wrong, but I think this is pure window dressing. I don't think they have any intent of actually passing this sales tax reduction. Mm. I think it's there to get a few headlines and to get pressure off of some of the other taxes that they're trying to pass.
Yeah, so what ultimately, just a public hearing, there was no vote in the committee on this property tax?
No, we had the public hearing yesterday on the package of tax bills, total of about $21 billion worth of taxes that they were proposing yesterday that we heard. Incredible amount of public participation. I think over 500 people signed in to testify, either for or against, largely against all of these tax increases. And then we'll have to, we'll see when they want to bring them out of committee, because it still has to get voted out of Ways and Means Committee. And then it has to go to the floor for a vote off of the Senate at large. I think right now the Democrats are probably getting together. So the Senate has passed a version of the budget. The House just last night, a little after midnight, April 1st, which is appropriate, passed their version of the budget. So now they've got to get together and figure out how to combine into one budget, an identical budget for both the House and the Senate. And within that, they're going to have to figure out what level of spending that they want to have, which will dictate how much taxes that they're going to levy on you and I.
Yeah, I think what confuses me, and you can maybe just explain it in a simple procedural way. You know, on Saturday, you guys were on the floor of the Senate and Democrats voted to pass their version of the budget. But then you're still hearing in committee some of the key components of that budget, like the tax increases. So I guess how can you pass a budget when the individual taxes associated with that budget haven't passed?
Yeah, it's crazy. So they spent the money before they actually earned it.
Yeah.
Right? They're doing everything backwards this year. I think the more appropriate and open, transparent way to do it is you pass the revenue before you pass the budget. I mean, you wouldn't do that in your household budget. You wouldn't go out and say, hey, I'm going to spend all of this money and then I'm going to go figure out how to make the money for it.
Then I'm going to go apply for jobs, right?
I'm going to go apply for a job after I've spent the money.
Yeah, I thought it was weird.
Everything about this has been weird, Brandy, I've got to say. And the bad thing about it is, as you well know, and probably all of your viewers know, is Senate Republicans have offered a proposal, a sensible proposal that had no taxes, no cuts to services, and it still fully funded all of our state's needs. So we offered that as an amendment on Saturday during our budget debate. It was defeated by the majority Democrats. So this really comes down to a choice in my mind, because if they agree with everything that was in my budget proposal or not, it was proof of the concept that it can be done, right? So they don't have to agree with everything, but the concept is solid. So it comes down to a choice of values. So we have a lot of Democrats who like to say that they are in favor of affordability. Well, I've got to say, if they pass a budget that's relying on, I don't care what the number is, $10, $12, $15, $21 billion worth of new taxes, whatever it is, they can never again say that they favor affordability. And if they do come out and try to say they favor affordability after passing taxes unnecessarily on people across our state, you and I, we've got to throw the BS flag and call them out, because you cannot stand for affordability and unnecessary taxes. Two separate things.
Yeah, and then you throw rent control in there. Like, oh, we're worried about high rents, so we're going to do increased property taxes, rent control. It's like they choose to not see the impact that will have.
Well, and nobody's talking about this, but they want to blow the cap off of the amount that your property taxes can go up every year. And then they want to put a cap on the amount that rent can go up. How do those two live over time in unison? They can't.
No. One more thing I want to ask you, and I don't know to the extent that you're willing to talk about who's trying to get your ear in the wings, but I have heard that representatives from Microsoft and Amazon and other major employers have been down in Olympia trying to dissuade Democrats from the increased B&O tax and from expanding Seattle's failed payroll tax statewide. There's been quite a bit of pushback. I mean, we saw in Seattle this past week, the mayor came out and said, we've lost thousands of jobs over our payroll tax. The revenue collected from it is $47 million less than expected in 2024. So now we're in a pretty bad budget situation because that is not manifesting. So I guess given that news out of Seattle, that this has failed in Seattle, is there any willingness, you think, from Democrats and, you know, the haunting of the halls from big tech and major employers? Is there any willingness from them to them that you've seen to back away from either of those proposals?
We'll see what they do. I'm curious, you know, because we have really four mega taxes on the table right now. Governor Ferguson is scheduled to come out with a press conference, I think, at 1 o'clock today. I'm not sure what he's going to talk about, but if I were to guess, I think that he would come out and say that he is not in favor of the wealth tax or the jobs tax, because they're just ridiculous. Which leaves the other two taxes on the table are the B&O tax and the property tax. So depending on what the legislative Democrats do, you know, that's the menu of options that they have. And I'll tell you, as far as I'm concerned, some of those rich companies and the rich people, if they don't want to pay the wealth tax or the jobs tax, they're capable of defending themselves. I'm going to stand as a wall against property taxes, because that affects every single person in my district and everyone in our state, whether they're owners or renters. I will stand against the rising tide of demands for higher property taxes. And I've got to say, being in a 30-19 minority down here in Olympia, you know, there's a lot of tide and a lot of water that's moving in, and 19 Republicans, we can't stop it all on our own. So that's why it was so refreshing last night to have over 43,000 Washingtonians join us in that wall to stem the tide. And that's what it's going to take throughout the rest of the session to make a difference. And so I just want to say thank you to everyone who signed in against that property tax, because it matters.
Yeah, amen. So we'll see what happens with those. I mean, we could go on and on forever, because now I'm worried if they don't pursue the business taxes, well, that blows a big hole in their budget. And I'm worried that that's going to fall even further on the middle class. So I don't know what their plan is. I guess we'll see what the governor has to say at one. Senator Chris Gildon, we appreciate it.
Hey,
recycle those papers, okay?
I think I'm going to put a ribbon on it and a nice little note and have it delivered to Senator Frame.
I love that. Please do that, okay?
All right.
Please do that. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That'd be a funny idea. Senator Noelle Frame, the chair of the Senate Ways and Means Committee. So I thought she did a good job with handling public testimony yesterday, although you always like to have more people have the opportunity to speak in front of the committee. So a lot going on with taxes. I mean, it's all just absolutely depressing. Coming up, speaking of depressing, just depths of journalism despair, we have a back-to-back on the Seattle Times and their what can only be characterized as intentional omission of facts in two recent stories. So we'll break those down first. Wouldn't you love to run your retirement portfolio through a Department of Retirement Efficiency? Well, Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwer Capital can help you out with that. First of all, getting a second opinion is always smart. So we do that with like major healthcare decisions. I mean, I get a second opinion for all sorts of, even at the restaurant. I don't know what to order. I ask the waitress for a second opinion. Hey, what would you recommend? This or that? I was thinking of this.
Oh,
second opinion. 100. And then usually they recommend something and I pick something else. But I digress.
I like that.
Right? So get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio with Zach Abraham and his team. Zach's the chief investment officer at Bulwer Capital. He also co-hosts our weekly show, Doge Watch, which will be out tomorrow morning for those of you who are fans of it. So in their portfolio review, what they do is they go over sort of the risk management strategy for your retirement portfolio. What is it right now and what should it be? Are you confident in the composition of your portfolio for 2024? Let Bulwer Capital show you a full reveal of how they're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. You only get one retirement, so get a second opinion on your portfolio's efficiency. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. Don't put it off. Knowyourriskradio.com. All right. Only the Seattle Times could write a 2,000-word story about the housing affordability crisis in our state and leave out every single fact about what's causing it. Only the Seattle Times. And we've kind of talked about this before where they don't put, and it has to be intentional. I mean, it's got to be, it's like propaganda. They don't show their readers the cause and effect. What is the cause of the effect that we're covering? So in this instance, the effect, right, is we have a housing affordability crisis and we have a lack of available housing. And they go through in this article 2,000 words, graphs, charts, everything that you can possibly think of. And 2,000 words is a really long article for a newspaper, by the way. And they've got quotes and stories of people going through it. And they 100% completely leave out the causation. Even though the headline, Seattle used to have affordable housing, what happened to it? Let me read a few excerpts from this story of things they included before we talk about the many things they didn't include. In 2014, new owners purchased Panorama House, an 18-story building on First Hill. And to renovate the decade-old apartments, they kicked out 200 tenants, many of them elderly and retired. What happened to Panorama was happening around the city. The price of what used to be affordable housing was skyrocketing, out of range for people working minimum wage jobs, surviving on fixed incomes, or dealing with physical disabilities or addiction. They go on to say, for every five households that Seattle added between 2010 and 2015, fewer than four housing units were added, according to census estimates. Developers spent the rest of the decade digging out of that hole. In one decade, Seattle became a vastly riskier place to live for poor people. Gee, who's been in charge for that last decade? Progressive Democrats? Got it. That's weird. And in that decade, it became a vastly riskier place to live for poor people. Gee. They go on to say, many were priced out of the city, and those who stayed often fell into lower income brackets as the city's average income rose, driven by an influx of high-earning tech workers. I'm going to keep reading. There were a record 16,868 homeless people in King County on a given night in 2024, and the glimmers of rental affordability seen in the past few years are likely to reverse soon. Oh my God, tell us why. Tell us why. Tell us why. The price to build skyrocketed during the pandemic. Construction costs in Seattle are 78% higher than they were a decade ago. Tariffs and trade wars could have driven those higher, and interest rates for apartment loans doubled in 2022. Enthusiasm for building has dwindled. Interesting. 2,000 words. Not once have they mentioned the fact that Democrats are this close to passing rent control. Don't you think that's a big factor that could have builders hesitant to spend a bunch of money building new units here? Not once in this story do they mention all the eviction laws and the eviction moratoriums that have made it nearly impossible for landlords to evict tenants, even for non-payment of rent over extended periods of time. Not once in this article do they mention all the restrictions placed on landlords for who they can and cannot rent units to, which we know have turned many of these, what used to be functioning affordable housing units, into dangerous drug dens. So much so, we did a story on the Addison in downtown Seattle, which is supposed to be an affordable housing unit, and they cannot make any money because of all the restrictions the city of Seattle has placed on these landlords that basically force them to rent units to unreliable tenants because racism or exclusion or something like that. So you have all of these policies over a period really in earnest of 10 years that have made Seattle and Washington State by extension a bad, expensive place to build and a bad, expensive place to be a landlord. None of that, none of any one of like the 12 restrictions that have been put on landlords, any one of like the dozen or so bad policies that have made building more expensive and have made renting units and owning units to rent out more expensive and riskier. Any of it, even one could have been mentioned by the Seattle Times. Not a single one was. Of course, they talked about big tech bad. Big tech made things more expensive. Oh, the tariffs. You got to throw in the tariffs. Tariffs making things more expensive. Ignoring all the very obvious culprits of our state's housing affordability crisis. So at what point do we just decide that that is intentional? I mean, come on. No mention of rent control? When you look at, for instance, when San Francisco passed rent control, the building of new units plummeted. And that's the same thing that's going to happen here. So the Seattle Times, oh, woe is me, telling all these sob stories of people who can't find an affordable place to live, all these charts and graphs and all these things. And they're not talking about even how much worse it's going to get when rent control is passed. So how is that? That has to be intentional, right? So why is it intentional? Why would they, if they care this much about this issue, if they care about the poor people and the elderly and the disabled who can't find an affordable place to live, why wouldn't they care just as much about exposing the real reasons why that's happening? The only explanation is bias. That's the only explanation. They want to blame tech. They want to blame high-paying jobs. They want to blame rich people. They want to blame greedy landlords and greedy developers who are just making sound business decisions. Yeah, probably not going to invest in, probably not going to invest tens of millions of dollars in a place like Seattle in Washington State where they're about to pass rent control and where landlords really have no ability to turn a profit because in a lot of cases, they're forced to let people to continue to live in their units even if they haven't been paying rent for like 2 years. I mean, those are real examples. There was the guy in Bellevue, lived in a place for more than 2 years, had enough money to pay rent, but knew he didn't have to. And taxpayers were the ones who kept bailing him out. So all of these policies have made this a really poor business investment for builders and landlords. And it's only going to get worse with rent control and increase property taxes. So you're going to drive property taxes up and then you're going to put rent control in place. So now the cost of owning one of these buildings or even a single family home that you're renting out or a duplex or a triplex, the cost of owning it, there's no cap. Because property taxes, there's no cap on how much they can go up now. But you're going to cap rent increases? Why would anyone with a brain be a landlord? Why would any builders come here and build a $50 million skyrise with apartment units to get supply up, which, of course, increasing supply and having, you know, some having the occupancy rates where they need to be is what is going to drive rents down. I mean, I don't need to explain this stuff to you, but it's so obvious, right? No one is being forced to make bad business decisions. The government can force people to do a lot of things, but they can't force developers to come in here and build units. They can't force people to buy those units and to be landlords. And it's simply not a good business decision right now to do either of those things. It's going to get much worse under rent control. It's going to get much worse under the property taxes. And the Seattle Times doesn't mention any of it. This is the newspaper of record for the state of Washington. It's like, I mentioned earlier that if you cared about those people who, because they spin these sob stories, right? And I do feel bad for people who are trying their best, who do have a job, and who can't find a place to live. Even for the middle class with two incomes, it's hard to afford a house in this state. I do feel bad. But if the Seattle Times really feels bad, you would want to get to the bottom of what's going on. It's the same with their coverage of homelessness, where they say, like, oh, it's a housing issue. People are falling into homeless, and they live in tents under bridges and shoot fentanyl between their toes because they couldn't afford rent on Capitol Hill. So the Seattle Times wants you to believe, oh, feel bad for the homeless because, oh, it's big, bad, greedy landlords and rising rents when it's a drug crisis, right? And I've always said that if you really care about the homeless, shouldn't you be exposing the real reason why there's so many homeless? And shouldn't you be pushing the government to address those root causes like addiction and mental illness? Instead, you're giving the government a free pass on all their failures and just chalking it up to, oh, cost of living's too high. I mean, this is it propaganda? I mean, is it intentional propaganda? Is it just bias? I really have a hard time with it. And I've got two stories on the show today about the Seattle Times doing this exact thing. And it's incredibly disappointing coming from the newspaper of record. And as I've been saying on the show, we do this weekly housing segment with the Rental Housing Association of Washington because things are getting so bad. If we don't stop rent control and the property tax increases, it's going to be bad for all of us. It's going to be bad for the city. It's going to be bad for the entire state. And landlords are just left feeling helpless or deciding, hey, I'm going to sell my unit. So if you're a small to mid-sized landlord, as I've been saying over and over, become a member of RHA because they're down in Olympia right now fighting against these policies, trying to fight to correct the misinformation being pushed out by the Seattle Times. And they're going to help you navigate this absolute cluster that we're in right now. But it's just the Seattle Times. And Seattle Times is the ones that's like, oh, don't let people like Brandy Cruz and Jonathan Cho in Olympia. Yeah, because we're the ones doing a crap job. I don't think so. In fact, in Unbelievable Today, we have another Seattle Times story that we're going to dive into. First, speaking of landlords who might sell their units, if you're thinking as a landlord, rent control is coming up, property tax increases are coming up, and I've just got to get out from underneath this rental unit, I'm just going to sell it and some family can buy it and live in it, and now it's not in the rental pool anymore, our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com can help you out with that. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Right now is actually a really good time in the market for sellers. The issue is low inventory, not low buyer demand. So homes that do hit the market are selling quickly due to that pent-up demand and the limited options that are out there. So if you've got a home that's priced correctly, properly prepared for sale, those are the homes that are going to do the best. And Wes Jones can help you out with both of those things. He says May is going to be a really strong month of the year for real estate. So reach out to Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's talk about another botched Seattle Times story, shall we, in our segment, Unbelievable. Whoop. Okay, so you probably heard this story about this hate crime involving a transgender individual in the U District. And I actually do think it happened. At first, I was like, oh, another Jussie Smollett case, but it sounds like there's some surveillance video and one of the suspects has done stuff like this before. So it really is a story, right? So the Seattle Times story, headline, police arrest man suspected in U District anti-trans hate crime attack. They arrested a 39-year-old Seattle man. He's now awaiting trial for a hate crime against a transgender woman. And as the Seattle Times points out, he's being investigated for a separate hate crime incident after he allegedly attacked another transgender woman Thursday night in the U District. So he's got two pending now cases involving alleged hate crimes and attacks on transgender individuals. And the U District one is absolutely horrifying. I mean, allegedly this guy was with a group of other people and like beat this transgender individual and was like shouting all sorts of craziness at it. So horrifying incident. So the Seattle Times reports on this and turns out they left out a pretty important detail. And it's a detail that we know they knew about because it's actually a detail that the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office put out to the media. And that is that the first time this individual, this 39-year-old, was arrested for the hate crime attack, he was put into jail. Guess who bailed him out? Anybody? Anybody at all? The Northwest Community Bail Fund, which we've talked about extensively on the show. They bail out the who's who, as long as your skin tone is the correct color. They don't care what you did. They'll bail you out so you can go on and commit other crimes. And we've talked about how dangerous it is because you have no accountability as an individual to that bail. Usually if you commit a crime and then you've got to put up 10% cash and some sort of equity to show whatever your bail is set at. In this case, for this guy, it was $30,000. So you would have to post $3,000 cash and then show you have $30,000 in assets. And if you don't show back up for court, you're going to lose the $3,000 cash. Well, you already lost that. But then they're going to come after you for the $30,000 or whatever asset you put up against it. So when you have a Northwest Bail Fund step in and cover it for you, that's not your money. Why do you care? Why do you have any motivation to come back to court? So the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office thought enough of that, that they put it in their information to the media, like, hey, we had this guy in jail, and it sounds like he's sort of indigent. Like, I don't know if he's homeless, but borderline. So probably wouldn't have been able to put up bail. And the King County Prosecutor's Office said, gee, Northwest Bail Fund let him out, and then he goes and allegedly attacks this other transgender person. Our friend Jason Rance is the one who broke this news. He said, a progressive activist group previously posted bond for hate crime suspect, and the Seattle Times ignored it. The suspect in hate crime against a transgender female in Seattle was previously bailed out of jail by the controversial Northwest Community Bail Fund group for a separate alleged hate crime incident. The 39-year-old suspect, Andre Philip Carlo, allegedly attacked a Sound Transit fare inspector who identifies as a transgender female in October of 2024. He pleaded not guilty and was bailed out by the Northwest Community Bail Fund. Rance goes on to call out the Seattle Times. In the Seattle Times coverage, reporter Catalina Gayton pointed out the alleged Trump reference, because there was apparently something that this guy said to the trans female in the U District about Donald Trump or MAGA or something, allegedly. So the Seattle Times, of course, you got to include that little tidbit, right? Makes it political. But she managed to completely ignore the involvement of the Northwest Bail Fund. The Seattle Times has been notable for its support of left-wing causes with a newsroom that is transparently biased towards Democrats. Is that why this bail detail was left out? Rance asks. Gayton did not respond to a request for comment. Again, this is something, and the Trump reference is fine. I have no issue with that. I mean, that is according to the police report, and there's some surveillance video, so I know some sort of attack happened, as hesitant as I am these days to believe the stories of people who say they were victimized by hate crimes. This guy has a history of it, so it seems like it's a legitimate incident. Did he shout something about Trump and MAGA? Very possibly so. It's absolutely a relevant detail to put in the story. But you simultaneously ignore the detail from the prosecutor's office about the fact that this guy probably would have still been in jail if not for this left-wing bail group. Again, how am I to believe that that's not intentional? It's an in-depth story. It's not like some little breaking news tidbit that's just out there and this is a developing story and we're going to update it. It's a reported out story. And they even talk about the fact that he posted $30,000 bail. So in the Seattle Times story, they mention that he bailed out after the first one and just completely leave out who bailed him out. I mean, why anyone would have a subscription, why anyone who has common sense and who's sick of the political direction of Washington State would still have a subscription to the Seattle Times is absolutely beyond me. All right, we're going to get to our daily subscriber show poll and what's happening in Idaho momentarily. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, because you can save money and it's free to do. So free to do and you can save money. total no-brainer. I just got a great email yesterday from Daniel. He said, hello, Brandy and Nicole. Just wanted to give you another First Mark success story. We were recently notified that our home insurance was being canceled because our River's Edge lavender farm was making too much money and the farm endorsement is on our home policy. So we worked with First Mark to not only obtain new home and farm insurance, but also to take over our auto, boat, RV, umbrella, and rental policies. We were sure to let them know you referred us. I've also referred a number of my clients to them who have also obtained insurance through First Mark. Thank you. We're here to serve. Love the Lavender Farm. Glad we could help out the Lavender Farm. They're great. So I think that's great. It's also a good reminder that they do business insurance as well. We insure our studio through First Mark in case anything ever happens here. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. We've heard from undivided viewers and listeners who have saved thousands of dollars a year by simply taking the First Mark Challenge. firstmarkinsurance.com. The best part is they work for you. All right. In national news, I want to talk about something happening in Idaho. Nicole and I were discussing it before the show. It's like Washington, but opposite. Completely unnecessary, a completely unnecessary ideologically driven law, and they attached an emergency clause to it. So they're like, this has got to go into effect right away. And here the lefties do all these unnecessary laws, attach emergency clauses to it, and I don't know in Idaho if it's still, if it has the same effect of bypassing voter referendum. It's just interesting though. So this from the Idaho Capital Sun. Idaho governor signs bill criminalizing public breast exposure and truck nuts. Now, truck nuts are the little, you know, the real light, they put them on the back of the.
Right.
Yeah. People.
And when I see them, I think, okay, like that's gross. Stop.
Yeah, but you can put, where does it end? Okay, let me read the story and then we'll discuss.
I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't be able to do it, free country, but I am saying. Ew, like, I'm not going to date you.
100%. You heard it here. Nicole will not date anybody who has truck nuts on their vehicle.
That's correct.
So if you were hoping for a date with Nicole, you got to take the truck nuts off. It says, Idaho Governor Brad Little signed into law a bill that criminalizes the public exposure of breasts. House Bill 270 updates Idaho's indecent exposure law, which already bans public exposure of genitals, to include female breasts and male breasts altered to look like female breasts, artificial breasts, and toys or products that resemble genitals. Breastfeeding is exempt. That's good. Mm-hmm. The bill takes effect immediately through an emergency clause. Little signed the bill Wednesday, according to the governor's office. Supporters say the bill will protect decency and modernize Idaho's indecent exposure law. Opponents say it could unduly punish transgender Idahoans and males experiencing hormonal conditions that enlarge breasts. The Republican supermajority-controlled legislature widely passed the bill with support from 87 Republican state lawmakers and opposition from 14 Democratic state. It really is the opposite. Idaho is the opposite of what's happening here. So a couple things. I guess I understand, like, if you are a male and you get a breast enhancement because you want to identify as a female, I guess if it's indecent exposure for a woman to have her womanly breasts out and you paid for fake breasts, then it should be the same.
Fair is fair.
So I think fair is fair. One thing I'm confused by is if you're a female and you want to identify as a man and you remove your breasts, because men can have their, for some reason, men nipples fine, women nipples not okay. I've never really quite understood that. So would that be if it's like the cut off what used to be there? I don't know.
Well, it's not specified as far as I know. So but I guess it, unless they're just considering you a female.
So it says artificial breasts are toys and products that resemble genitals are also public indecency. So the truck nuts, right?
Well, that and prosthetics, I believe, is what they're also talking about.
I can see that one because there's been some pretty. I went to a drag show when I was in Boston with my friend Johnny. And there was somebody who had some. It was like a funny drag show. It was like, why are you pointing that way?
Oh, remember the prosecutor or the lawyer?
Yes, in
the
Seattle.
The attorney in Seattle that had those gigantic.
Fake. That was
sorry,
like,
I'm
what
pointing
it was
at
like.
Seattle.
Yeah, I was like, what are you? Who's here? Hello? Yeah, I just, where does it end? Because you can have like the figures of the naked ladies on your mud flaps.
It's a shadow.
Okay.
So I guess that wouldn't be, you know, as revealing.
So if you had like a naked, I suppose, yeah, if you have like an actual, like, because it says realistic,
right?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I guess it's part of Idaho's mission to become more, or what was it, common sense values.
More
bring
demure.
Back some of the common sense values. And you know what? I'll give it to them. Stop making, you have kids in other cars. Like, kids don't need to be seeing boobies all over the place and little nuts hanging off trucks. Like,
what about a pride? What about one of those pride parades where you've got people who are like,
That's what I'm saying.
The summer solstice parade in Seattle, yes, where it's naked bicyclists.
Yeah, stop and normalizing it.
It's literally disgusting, because then you have kids around dudes with their hanging out on a naked bicycle, and they think because they put a layer of paint over it, it's perfectly acceptable. And then the pride parades.
Yep,
they're
it's
naked
normalizing,
in bondage, spanking each other.
It's normalizing the sexuality for younger kids and just making them okay with seeing those things. And I just think that we should keep kids sheltered a little bit longer, let them hold on to that innocence a little bit longer, but this is a widespread thing. This is happening in schools. This is happening.
What's happening in schools?
Normalizing kids to sexual things very early on.
Yes. As
they
we're
are
going to talk
definitely
about
trying,
next.
Yes. Yes. Trying to overly sexualize kids. It's disgusting.
Yeah, and it's perverted. Like, kind of, okay, so the parents who bring their kids to the pride parade, you know what your kid is going to see.
Yep.
And that's a parental choice you've made, which I think is a really odd one, and borderline maybe should be criminal to some extent.
Yeah.
It's perverted. What I'm talking about is like the, oh my God, I'm just out with my family, and all of a sudden riding by is some dude naked on a bike. You know, that's right. How can that not be against the law? It's just absolutely insane.
But I think
Seattle,
that's indecent exposure.
No, I don't think it is. I think in Seattle, the law
public
is,
nudity?
And somebody might correct me, I think it has to be, it's only, indecent exposure is only a crime if you're motivated by sexual intent. So for instance, if you're naked on a, I believe that's the law. Somebody will correct me if it's not. But you're on a bench and you're pleasuring yourself.
Right.
Like, then that becomes against the law. But I actually don't think it's against the law just to be nude, because or else the summer solstice parade would be illegal. Half the stuff that happens at the pride parade would be illegal. I am pretty confident it has to do with, like, sexual pleasure as a motivating factor.
So, it says intentionally makes an open and obscene exposure.
Yeah, I think it has to be combined with some sort of sexual pleasure thing. Anyway, not to.
I think it's just state law.
Yeah, it's weird. We'll look into it.
But I agree with Idaho and bring back some decency.
Can you imagine the Idaho state troopers who have to pull over the guy? Look, your truck nuts are too realistic.
They gotta
sign this law. I gotta cut the truck nuts off, and then you got the trooper over there. He's just like cutting the nuts off some guy's car. Just good. It's good stuff. Okay, our daily subscriber show poll today has to do with a story that we're going to talk about on the show tomorrow. And so I wanted to get you guys' opinions about this issue before we discuss it. Not that it'll change necessarily what I have to say, but the subscriber poll on Patreon, Locals, and X: should Planned Parenthood have any role in public schools? And I asked you if you believe it does to please articulate what role you think it ought to have. So yes or no, Nicole, should Planned Parenthood...
No.
Let me finish. Planned Parenthood.
Absolutely
have any.
Not.
Yeah. And we've done stories about in the Olympia School District, like Planned Parenthood coming in and teaching this bizarre sex ed lesson that was not approved by parents. So most people, most of our subscribers saying no, it should have no role, like 80 to 90% over on Patreon, 87% say no, Kathleen, because when they came into our high school, they lied to us about basic biology of fetal development. That was 24 years ago, and they have continued to lie to women. Let me see. Jennifer says the only role that Planned Parenthood should have in schools is just knowledge of Planned Parenthood, but nothing more, and only from middle school up. So maybe knowledge as part of like sex ed lessons that Planned Parenthood exists, and here's like safe sex stuff that you can do there, or whatever it is. Jackie says, as mom of an almost teenager, I do not believe Planned Parenthood should be in our schools. Yes, we need to teach our kids health, about their bodies, how to take care of them, about procreation. I don't think we need a private company with all its agendas and motives teaching sex ed. Carmel Slee says, I think having knowledge about birth control should be available for high schoolers. No more involvement than that. Prevention is helpful. And I do agree. Prevention is important. Now, can you teach that lesson without Planned Parenthood?
Yes.
I think so.
100%. Yes. And I'm pretty sure we have a curriculum set up. Like, here's the curriculum. So here's the textbook, what kids need to know. I don't even agree with all the curriculum, obviously. Yeah. But I think that at least has parent approval. Here you go. Done.
Yeah.
We don't need personal opinions involved.
Yeah. Gen X says, once upon a time, I would have said yes for birth control, but they are providing hormones to trans-identifying kids with almost no screening criteria. Also, abortions have become a money-making business. I no longer support Planned Parenthood the way that I used to. Alice says, this organization mostly peddles an ideology with a side of resources. I think this sort of education belongs in the home. Sadly, some parents have failed and left it to the schools and teachers. If Planned Parenthood were truly effective, we would have fewer unwanted pregnancies. That's a good point. Like, Planned Parenthood is supposed to be about planning parenthood, right? And so I think it's almost become synonymous with just being an abortion provider.
Right.
But I mean, in theory, they're supposed to be helping people avoid the need for an abortion by helping them avoid unplanned pregnancies. So we'll have a Planned Parenthood / public school / kids related story coming up on the show tomorrow. And so I'll include some of your thoughts in
part
that
of
as
our
well.
Get your kids out of public part school of our, series.
Yes. We should have a series called Get Your Kids Out of Public Schools.
Pull them.
ASAP. All right, let's get to some comments, shall we? Adorable Deplorable, $5 Super Chat. As if the pay-per-mile tax isn't bad enough, Olympia Democrats have just announced a pay-per-toilet flush tax. Taco Bell just got way more expensive. Have they really announced a... That's a joke, right?
I hope so.
You know the funny thing is? Oh, it's April Fool's Day. Okay, you got me.
Yeah, yeah, fair. But you know what? It's believable.
It's believable. That's the thing is, like, I can't make up any jokes about Olympia because reality is far funnier than anything I could possibly make up. Matthew Cook, Olympia proving that nothing good happens after midnight. True. Tur says, this is why when my husband retires, we're moving elsewhere. Cost of living is too damn high and all the wokies will continue to bleed the stone for more taxes unchecked. I love Washington for all its diversity and beauty, but we can't afford to stay. Such a bummer. Papa Woody, Democrats taxing so much, I can't afford super chats. We're going to start taxing your super chats at a rate of 40%. No, we're not. I mean, YouTube does take part of the super
chats,
right?
Yeah, they do.
It's got to be like, what, taxed. 4%? Helios Abbott, small businesses won't survive property tax increases. Say goodbye to a lot of jobs, including mine. Well, I hope you don't lose your job. Captain Cranky Pants, they do not need more money. They need to learn to manage the money they already got. It's not rocket science. Yeah, I mean, Senate Republicans literally introduced a budget that didn't include any new taxes. And so it's like, it can be done. They just choose not to do it. It's a choice for sure.
Yep.
Wake up, Washington. Don't forget that the Times received $112,000 from the Democrat-controlled legislature. Maybe that's why they're so kind to them. And maybe that's why they're so keen on not speaking up for the likes of me and Jonathan Cho and other new media. They want equal access to politicians because we'll do the job they failed to do, and they can't have that. Can't have that at all. All right, great comments, everyone. We'll get to our closing sanity check, which is a musical one today. First, I've talked about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, and I continue to hear from people who are like, hey, I'm on Eastside, and I'm down 20 pounds or 30 pounds. I've lost 40 pounds total on the program. I started my journey 2.5 years ago, and it's the only thing I've ever done for weight loss that has stuck, literally, in my entire life, where I've had a bunch of diet ups and downs and fad diets and crash diets. The only thing I've ever done that I have had long-term success on is the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. And that's because there's no gimmicks. They just teach you portion control, what to eat in the right portions, how to choose healthy foods and combine them in the right ways to boost your metabolism. And then they give you some tips and tricks after your initial 60 days on the program to be able to maintain the weight loss for life. And I found it really easy to follow. The thing that helped me stick to it is, one, you lose weight pretty rapidly, but two, there's no wiggle room. They tell you what to do every day for 60 days. And I'm good at that. So like, if you tell me what to do, I'll just treat it like a job. 60 days goes by in a flash, and I lost almost 30 pounds in my first 60 days. So if you are someone who can stick to a plan, as long as you get the plan from someone else, Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program is right for you. So start with a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. All right, let's end with something fun, shall we, in our closing sanity check. All right, did you guys see Kid Rock in the White House in the Oval Office, which was just so funny? Who was it that said, Peter Ducey said he was dressed like a
Like a guy that was going to be shot out of a cannon.
Like a guy that was going to be shot out of a cannon.
He did.
Which is such a good description of how he was dressed. It's just so entertaining. So he was in the Oval Office, and he ended up playing the FDR's piano, which is pretty cool. So it was presented in 1938 to President Franklin D. Roosevelt for the White House. It is a mahogany showcase with gilded eagles. I'm just reading a description of this fancy piano. And this is from the White House, right? Kid Rock now joins history with many musicians who have played before him, like Duke Ellington, B.B. King, and Presidents Nixon and Truman. All right, so Trump invited Kid Rock into the Oval Office to sign an executive order to help curb ticket scalping, and then we got this little musical moment as well. He changed outfits, though.
He did.
That's not
he
what
did
he was wearing
this.
With Trump.
Had to look fancier for this, you know?
Yeah.
Look at those eagles. Those
They're
are pretty cool.
Beautiful. And I'm heading down west because I want to be a cowboy. I wish you just
classy.
Cowboy, baby. And it's a lit down in the sunshine shining. I wish you would have just busted it out.
That would have been pretty
That's
good.
That's what I was waiting for. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Gosh, I don't even know what day it is. Tuesday?
Something like that.
Yeah, I do want to warn you guys. It's quite possible we don't have a show tomorrow. You'll find out tomorrow.
Stay tuned.
We're working on some special projects, and we've got some filming days that are kind of in flux. And so I'll make sure I give you guys plenty of notice as to when we know. But just a heads up on that. If you have not signed up to support the show already, please do so. We're a fan-funded show. We can only do this with your support. UndividedPod.com. Just click on the little banner that says support the show for $5. And if you are a first responder, a member of the military, or a veteran, you can use the promo code USA and get 30% off your first year of Undivided, which I think is pretty cool. So we got a lot of content coming your way tomorrow if we have a show. If not, I guess we'll just have Undivided overtime on Thursday. Who knows? We'll just stack it all up. Okay. That's all I got because I have something in my throat now. I really need something to drink.